People of Note on Fine Music Radio is proudly brought to you each week at this time by Peter Turin Productions. You're listening to Fine Music Radio. Rodney Trudgeon welcoming you to this week's edition of People of Note. My guest is an author who's just written what I think is quite an extraordinary book. It's called Meetings with Mozart, and he set it in eastern South Africa, along with its lush midlands, soaring mountains, and arid bushveld. And the book vividly evokes the sense of time and place, of its milieu, the fragrance of the flora, the music of its bird calls, the torrential storms of its summers. The narrative interweaves the high and the low points of Mozart's life and his music genius with the lives of present-day characters. And in fact, the author is William Charlton Perkins, a journalist and columnist, and regarded as one of South Africa's eminent opera connoisseurs. William grew up with his three siblings in the Natal Midlands in a home that brimmed with their parents' passion for the arts, a passion he inherited. He describes himself as a lapsed amateur pianist that has regarded Mozart as his musical deity since childhood. So it's perhaps inevitable that Meetings with Mozart is his debut novel. So, William, welcome. Welcome to Fine Music Radio and to Cape Town.
Thank you, Rodney, and it's great to be with you.
Well, I made a thing about Cape Town because you said you hadn't been here for, what, 20 years, and you live in Knysna at the moment.
29 years since I've been in the mother city, and I'm overwhelmed with delight being back.
And you've just missed some very hot weather, but never mind. And you're living in Knysna at the moment.
I have lived in Knysna for the past 6 years, yeah.
All right. Because we met, I think, in Durban, Johannesburg, Durban. You were involved with the opera world in Johannesburg and Durban and Pretoria, weren't you?
Yeah, with PACT, Performing Arts Council of the Transvaal. And then I moved down to Durban when the Playhouse has newly reopened as the Natal Playhouse.
That's right.
And I've stayed in Durban all the time ever since until 2019 when I moved down to Knysna.
This book that you've just written, was that written while you were in Knysna? Or tell us a little. Let me ask you, I need to know where this comes from because it's such an original idea.
Right. A friend of mine, a composer, Juan Burgers, well known in South Africa, is multi-skilled musician, wrote an opera about Nelson and Winnie Mandela called Ubuntu, and that premiered at the Playhouse in Durban in 2016, I think. And then Juan asked me if I'd like to collaborate on another opera on the life of Mozart, and of course I said yes, absolutely. Mozart had been my musical passion since I was a child of 8 years old. And what I did was I started buying a whole lot of books about Mozart because musicology changes from one generation to the next, and spent some months reading and making notes.
Did you know at this point what you were going to write? Did you have an idea of this concept?
It started happening in my mind quite quickly, actually. Mm-hmm. And I remember after about 5 months of taking these notes, I just thought, you know, better get down and start. So I sat down on the edge of my bed and started tapping out a monologue into my Galaxy smartphone.
Really?
And then I quickly moved
as basic as that.
Moved to my laptop.
Yeah.
And within about 4 months, I'd written over 5,000 words. Higgledy piggledy, not in any order, but different scenes and monologues and ensemble pieces. Mm-hmm. What happened was Juan had just been engaged by Cape Town Opera to teach at the South African College of Music, teaching opera students. So his career took a completely different trajectory, and nothing happened in terms of a score. And then last year, a friend of mine who had moved to Perth in Western Australia put a post on Facebook announcing her new career as a book editor. So I connected with her, and that's how it all happened. So I took the libretto, put it into chronological order, and then in tandem with that, I wrote a contemporary narrative of this group of the main character's name is Horace, and he's a retired opera director who's had an international career, and he's just turned 70, and come back to his home. And it's Pietermaritzburg, but I don't actually mention specifics in the book, but it's implicit that it's the eastern seaboard of South Africa. This group of Mozart enthusiasts have heard about Horace, and they all congregate around him. And he forms this group called the August Society for the Veneration of Wolfgang. And what happens is the group meets in Horace's lovely, lavish old Victorian mansion the first Monday of every month. And they take turns in discussing Mozart's life, the music he wrote at that stage. And it carries through right until his untimely death at the age of 36. They don't always meet in Mozart's home. It depends on the season. They go to the Midlands hotels, to the Drakensberg, to Zululand, to the bush camps in the winter months. Horace, to a large extent, is me. So
I was just going to say,
a lot
is
of the
it?
Book is yes. is autobiographical, but in a fictional form.
Right.
So all my experiences are what Horace describes as his past life.
Is that what you set out to do when you sat down to write the book?
You know, it was like going into free fall. I just didn't know I just went with the flow. It was the most That's exhilarating thing, actually. Because when I was at university, there was no such thing as creative writing. It was all what we called practical criticism. And we would sit down in the arrogant little second year students and tear Dostoevsky in English translation to pieces, or Jane Austen, goodness knows what cheat that was, or Henry James or Joseph Conrad or whoever, you know.
Yeah.
And the result of that was I never had the confidence to lay out what I thought. I was always protecting myself.
Mm-hmm.
But I learned to write because I became a hack. I was a publicist.
Yes, that's for a large part of your career.
Yeah, yeah. And I had my own column when I wrote for the Mercury newspaper in Durban called Classical Notes, which was a bi-monthly column. It came out every second Thursday. And I had carte blanche to write what I liked. So I'd interview musicians, review symphony concerts, review Durban Friends of Music, do CD reviews. And then I started to write international reviews for Opera Rara in London. And when I moved to Knysna, it became an online column. And I'd put my post out on Facebook, ArtsLink, which is the South Africa's biggest arts website. All the journalists in the country go onto ArtsLink to see what's going down, and all the publicists go onto it to get a head start for the same reason. So I learned to write in that way, and then this all happened and it turned into a book.
Okay, we're going to come back to the book. But first of all, tell me about your first piece of music, The Barber of Seville, but importantly, not Rossini.
Right. So I love Paisiello, who was a contemporary of Mozart, a very famous Italian composer in his day. And his opera, The Barber of Seville, was so famous and so beloved by the opera goers of the day that when Rossini wrote his opera, Paisiello's was written in, I think, about 1780s somewhere, Rossini wrote his Barber of Seville, premiered in Rome in 1816. It was booed because it dared to tread the same
really?
Grounds. Yeah.
Yes.
And there's a very beautiful serenade where the Count Almaviva serenades Rosina, who's the heroine of both operas. And in the Paisiello one, he accompanied himself with a mandolin. And it is the most beautiful melody. Once you've heard it, it breaks your heart, and B, you never forget it. I think it was in the movie Barry Lyndon that it was played again, but it's been used in several movie scores since then. So I just thought your listeners would like to hear that wonderful tune.
Thank you.
Was the first choice of my guest on this week's edition of People of Note, William Charlton Perkins. We're talking about his new book, Meetings with Mozart, that's just been published, and it's called your debut album. Is it really? Is this the first book you've ever written?
It is, yeah. I've written thousands of words, but in my career, if my column in the Mercury, mm-hmm. press releases for clients, reviews. So, yeah, lots and lots, but first book.
Regarding Mozart, who is, I think, beloved of many, many people, and is clearly your deity, I think it says somewhere in music, you said you started loving Mozart at the age of 8.
I did, yes. My father loved music and was a very good amateur pianist. He wasn't a pianist by profession, he was a country GP. But he had lots of records, and I was exposed to all his recordings. He had what was then called a radiogram back in
yes,
the day.
Yes, I do remember those. And that ages both of us, doesn't it?
Yeah, indeed. And Mozart very quickly became my passion. And when I was at school, I took piano lessons and always gravitated to Mozart and Bach, actually. And mm-hmm. I loved playing Bach because you could bash it out. And Mozart was always more demanding. You had to get it as close to perfection as possible, which was never anywhere near possible in my case. But, yeah, that's how I was drawn to
it. So you did the piano, as you say, in a sort of deference to yourself, that you were a lapsed amateur pianist. Because obviously you didn't follow a music career at all.
No. At university, I majored in English and history. And then I went on and did an honors in English literature. And then I went to live in Johannesburg. And I started working at this wonderful old cultural emporium called Recordia.
Oh, yes. The huge record shop in downtown.
And Recordia, in its heyday, along with Vanguard Books, well, it became legendary. I mean, at Recordia had the most cosmopolitan stock of records anywhere on earth, and that is absolutely true. We got records from Russia, Japan, Czechoslovakia, France, Germany, all over the world, and we had all the big library accounts, UNISA, across the country.
It was an institution, wasn't it?
Completely. And all the staff learnt on the job. We learnt how many operas or symphonies so wrote, and which were the best recordings according to our Bible, the Gramophone magazine.
Yes, which I am still
associated
with. Oh, me too,
yeah.
Yes.
And it was the most wonderful, it was a privilege to be able to learn like that in that environment. Mm. I was moved to the Santon branch And I worked in Sandton for 12 years, during the course of which I started writing reviews for a magazine called Living in those days. Mm-hmm. And then I started working as an opera publicist for, as I said, for the Performing Arts Council in Pretoria.
What attracted you to opera, by the way? We know that you're a little bit of a Mozart fanatic.
My father bought me a book on the life of Joan Sutherland by an Australian writer called Russell Braddon, and I was transfixed. Sutherland became my absolute passion.
And you had started listening to her as
well? Yeah, yeah, yeah. I used to drive my whole family crazy by playing Sutherland, and so loud you could hear her about three blocks away. And when I went to do my ACF training in the Navy in Simonstown, my mother used to write me these passionate letters. She missed me so much. And I couldn't wait to get home. And she said, "You'd never believe it, but I'm actually missing Joan Sutherland."
So that was your entry into the world
and
of opera.
And then it was Schwarzkopf and Callas and Leontine Price. And what broke the ice with me and Mozart was I got the Giulini recording of Don Giovanni with the young Joan Sutherland as Donna Anna and the great, great Madame Schwarzkopf as Donna Elvira and Eberhard Wächter as the Don and Giuseppe Taddei as Leporello.
Yes, what a cast.
And wow. Luigi Alva as the most wonderful Don Ottavio ever with the Philharmonia Orchestra, and the producer was the legendary Walter Legg, who was Schwarzkopf's husband. Mm-hmm. And it is still the yardstick recording. From that day on, it was, came out in 1960.
There are so many yardstick recordings from that period, both from EMI with Walter Legg, from Decca with John Culshaw.
Absolutely.
When there were these amazing singers that fortunately have been captured mostly in stereo.
Yeah, yeah.
In fact, your next piece of music has Elizabeth Schwarzkopf, features Elizabeth Schwarzkopf, singing of all things Danny Boy. Why did you choose this?
When Schwarzkopf died, I wrote a tribute to her, and I said how she had the ability to transform tinsel into gold.
Oh, what a lovely expression.
And she sang this piece with the great Gerald Moore, who was her accompanist of choice. Mm-hmm. And when you listen to that recording, be prepared to weep your eyes out. It is so moving and so wonderful.
Summer's gone.
I have to agree with you. Apart from anything else, Elizabeth Schwarzkopf had the most extraordinary voice.
I saw her.
Oh, did you?
I saw her in the Durban City Hall.
So did I.
And I remember being completely unable to breathe, not knowing which side of the stage she was going to enter from. And I was sitting right up in the gods of the Durban City Hall, which is South Africa's largest acoustic venue. And I had binoculars, field glasses. And she swept onto the stage like this magnificent film star.
Mm.
And I could hardly breathe.
Well, there she was, away from the opera world, singing that traditional Irish tune, Danny Boy, accompanied by the great Gerald Moore. My guest is William Charlton Perkins. He's just written a book called Meetings with Mozart. And this is what we're talking about mostly. And I'll let you know in a while where to get it. Because, William, I think I'm right in saying you said it's not on the shelves yet.
Not yet, but we're getting there.
Okay,
but
so
you could get it online.
At the end of the program, I'll give you a couple of online addresses for you to get. But eventually it will be on our shelves as well. And we got as far as hearing about your life as in the world of opera. Have you ever, and also in the world of records, and you must know so well now how sad it is that we don't have that sort of situation, where you go into a place like Recordia, and the people behind the counter knew what they were talking about. You could say which is the best recording of X, Y, and Z, and their recommendation would usually always be immaculate. Rather like Hans Kramer here in Cape Town.
Absolutely.
And now that doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
And people buy things online.
Mm-hmm.
What next? Being silly here. But nonetheless, William, this book, what I liked about it as well was how you did move it, as you said, into the Midlands of Natal and to game farms and mountain tops. Because the essential base of that group was always there, and you get to know the characters so well. And that is the other thing. How did you come up with the characters? Because they're all so well drawn.
They're all based on people I've known.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
okay.
With all warts and all. And all of them eccentrics, one way or another, because I'm an eccentric person.
Yes, you are, may I say.
Yeah, so it's all based on my own life, basically, mm-hmm. and people I've known, my parents' gardens, where I lived at different times, the descriptions of the terrain.
Yes, you've got lovely descriptions, actually, of the flora, the smells, the beautiful, beautiful word painting.
I worked for the Natal Parks Board for a while, and I used to go to Zululand, it was called, and I did a book about the Shishluwe Amfilozi Park for the centenary, which was published by Strake. So,
that wasn't a novel, presumably.
No. Yeah, that was a tourism, like a coffee table book in paperback. So, I wrote quite a few feature articles for Getaway magazine. So I drew on that experience when I was describing the various locales when the group go to the Drakensberg, which is, I don't name it, just call it, I just talk about the mountains.
Yeah, and it was interesting because you don't say where these places are.
No, I don't.
But I could, having come from Natal myself, I could feel, because I think you even talk about humidity at one stage, at one of the meetings.
Right.
And here, I'm just going to read a short little thing talking about your word painting. The landscape became a shimmering haze of kaleidoscopic pastels, glittering tinctures of light that flitted and danced like rain at dawn. The sound of the Benedictus from Mozart's Requiem washed over them, the group that was watching this chap, Horace. So all through the book, obviously nature does play a part in your life, because even in Neisner, you're almost on a small holding, aren't you?
Yeah, I have a large garden and it's surrounded by forests, so the bird life is just glorious. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have guinea fowl coming to visit with their chicks. And I stop breathing and I get my phone and I video them, and I just feel so privileged and happy that they're part of my life, you know.
Yes.
And the Birchild Cuckoo, the rainbird, and the Neisner Luries or Turak or Truk, I can't remember what they call
them. Would you call yourself a bird watcher?
I'm a very ill-informed bird watcher. I have Robert's app on my phone. So I'm always doing what I shouldn't and playing. When I hear a Lurie, I put it on, which apparently one shouldn't do, and I stop after about a minute, but it's an irresistible urge.
Of course. So there's this thing in you, isn't there? The words, which you love, you obviously love words, music, Mozart, and nature. What a wonderful combination to come together with Mozart and these people. How many of these characters are there in this group that meets with Horace?
There are 10 altogether. There's Noel, Alicia, Krish, Lalita, Ayanda, Georgie, Hari, and later we have Tana and Petra.
Lovely names as well. And you say each one is based on someone you know.
Yeah.
Now, the next thing I'm going to ask you after our next piece of music is about the drawings, the sketches, which really make the book up as well. But you've got Reynaldo Hahn coming up now, another song. Tell me about this, the French songwriter.
Again, the song that the artist I've chosen to sing is called Si Mes Vers, and it is one of the most beautiful melodies ever written by anybody on earth. I've chosen a French-Canadian soprano called Karina Gauvin, who I discovered online, who has a voice like a pearl with aspects of an opal. It's just glints. It's got this lovely, creamy patina, seamless line, the perfect Mozart soprano. She's very famous for her Handel recordings, and she's able to sing the most immaculate French chanson because she is French-speaking herself.
Beautiful music by the French composer Reynaldo Hahn. And another choice of my guest. What was that?
Si Mes Vers.
Ah, okay. And the singer?
French-Canadian soprano Karina Gauvin.
Okay. We're talking about opera, actually, although the reason William Charlton Perkins is here is because of his new book that's just been published, his debut novel called Meetings with Mozart. And I like its subtitle as well, A Profound Contribution to Humanity, Love. And just going back to opera briefly, William, do you still, how do you consume opera at the moment? Do you listen to lots of recordings?
I do.
Especially in Naizen because...
I always listen on headphones these days because my two housemates are not opera fans at all. And for the sake of peace...
Tranquility in the home.
Absolutely. And I actually listen... I enjoy the immediacy of the headphones. I watch movies with my headphones on as well.
Okay.
When I'm not writing.
It does concentrate the mind, I think, listening on headphones. But just getting back to the book, William, the sketches in there, the drawings, fascinated me as well because they're kind of not over the top. They don't stick out at you, but yet they add a lovely dimension. They almost look like pencil sketches.
They are absolutely lovely. They were done by a friend of mine who I've known for more than 50 years. We were at university together. We did our BAs and we both did English honors, and then I left. But her name is Christine Stillwell, and she stayed at the university, and she ended up as professor of librarianship at what became UKZN, the University of KwaZulu-Natal. When we started out, it was still Natal University in Pietermaritzburg. When I was writing the book, I did a storyboard of characters. I wanted to have a picture of what my characters looked like. So I found pictures online, and then I sent them to Chris, and she did line drawing renditions with her. She did them with her computer. So, yeah. Very skilled. She writes wonderful poetry. She paints. And she lives in Ondras, near Hermanus. And
when you say you looked for things on, looking at things for your board, were you looking at actual real people?
And yeah, you go onto Google or there are all sorts of websites where everything's in the public domain. I did two storyboards, one for my characters and then one of the indigenous flora of Natal.
Mm-hmm.
For example, the different thorn tree blossoms and fluffy flowers, and lots of them with wonderful fragrances and that sort of thing. And then the different areas, like in the arid red soil of Umfolozi Game Reserve, for example, and the soaring mountain peaks of the Drakensberg, and those wonderful indigenous forest alleys where the colors range from indigo to, all, you know, as wherever the sun is, and the russet colors of the golden highveld in the winter months in the foothills, you see.
Mm-hmm.
So all of that, I collected visuals to help me when I was actually describing them.
Because what I found was meeting the characters in the book as you're reading the book and then seeing their sketch, it sort of automatically... I just assumed that really was that person because they seem so in character, if that makes sense,
yeah,
with the character.
Well, Chris and I worked in tandem. I kept her. She read the book, obviously. Mm-hmm. So she had an idea of, and we discussed the characters together.
Okay. So
of course, my editor, Jo Smith in Australia, she was actually the reason that I wrote the book in the first place. Because she put this thing on Facebook about her new career.
That's right, which you said at the beginning, yes.
So Joe, Chris and I sort of like conferred, and that was the result.
And did you go through the whole thing of proofreading and editing and all that? Did you have that?
Oh, wow, absolutely. Joe Smith was she was an absolute Rolls Royce of an editor. I couldn't ever have asked for a more wonderful support.
Mm-hmm.
And she went way beyond what was basically what an editor would do.
Yeah. William, your opera side, going back to that once again, and because of your love of Mozart, you call him your musical deity since childhood, as we discovered, would it follow that Mozart's operas are for you the greatest?
They're the highest human creations ever, along with the great Shakespeare plays. And
you do say sweeping things, don't you?
I stand by this. And Jane Austen's six great novels, which they've been called miracles, and they are, as are the late Mozart operas. The three, first of all, Idomeneo, which is the grandest of all his operas and with the most magnificent orchestration, written for a great, great orchestra. It was the great orchestra of the of Germany or the German principalities in the 18th century. And then the Entführung aus dem Serail, the abduction from the Seraglio, which he wrote when he first went to live in Vienna. And then the Mountain Peaks, the three Da Ponte operas, The Marriage of Figaro, Don Giovanni, Così fan tutte, which means women are like that.
Yes, difficult one to translate.
And then the two final operas, which he wrote more or less in tandem, La Clemenza di Tito, which is the high point of the great classical era. It's not a note out of place. It is the most perfect, pared-back classical writing with wonderful, lavish pieces for clarinet obbligati. And then the final, heartbreakingly beautiful magic flute. And then, of course, the Requiem, which he wrote. Yes. He never finished. He was dying when he wrote it.
The opera you mentioned there about La Clemenza di Tito, about being this most perfect piece of operatic writing, would you put it above the Da Ponte peaks, as you call them?
No. Clemenza actually is a hark back to the serious operas of the 18th century, but Mozart's level of perfection completely transforms it into a thing apart, a thing of its own. And it is, I mean, if you know the Mozart clarinet concerto.
Yes, yes.
It is the most famous, the most perfect. In fact, it's the greatest, I would say, well, the greatest clarinet concerto ever written. And again, perfect. And Clemenza was at the same time.
Oh, I see. Yes, very late.
Written
in his
for
life.
The two famous arias from Clemenza had solo parts for clarinet, which were created for Anton Stadler, the famous virtuoso clarinetist of the 18th century.
Now, the other thing is with that Mozart clarinet concerto, which I think we can agree is possibly the greatest clarinet concerto written. But you know what my personal favorite is the clarinet quintet.
Oh, yeah, and the trio as well.
And the trio, yes. Yeah. The Kirchhofstadt trio, as it's called. But your love of Mozart, I presume, crosses all aspects of his work.
The six string quartets he wrote for Haydn, hugely. Haydn himself said, I bow down before you.
He did too, yeah. Do you listen to a lot of Mozart?
All the time. I always go back to Mozart, always.
Okay. But presumably they call you one of the opera connoisseurs here in South Africa, but does that then extend to the other operas, to the great Italian and German operas?
Oh, completely. I'm very promiscuous in my taste of opera. I love Handel. I love Vivaldi operas, the Bel Canto school. Rossini is one of my huge passions. All Rossini, not just the famous comic operas.
Right.
Donizetti, Bellini, the great, great Giuseppe Verdi.
Yes, I'm glad you introduced
him. I love Ponchielli.
Like that.
I love the Verismo school, Mascagni, Puccini, Leoncavallo. I love Richard Strauss. I love Wagner.
Okay, you can stay. William, coming to your next piece, Marilyn Horne here singing Stephen Foster's famous song, Beautiful Dreamer. Isn't she a remarkable woman? And she's just turned 90 or something,
I think. She has. So I first discovered Marilyn Horne when I bought my first complete opera of Bellini's Norma, with Joan Sutherland in the title role and Marilyn Horne as Adalgisa. Bellini wrote the two roles for two sopranos, actually. And it's a very high part for a mezzo-soprano to sing. And Marilyn Horne has got this incredibly rich, peachy... She's really a contralto with an extended top.
Yes, she's got a...
And she had the most formidable arsenal of coloratura technique. She could sing the most incredibly florid, rapid scales, but she could sing the most wonderful creamy legato. And she sang a lot of American songs. Stephen Foster, of course, was the great 19th century pop composer of Americana, and Beautiful Dreamer is one of his most beautiful songs. Thank you.
That is quite, I've never heard that version before. Marilyn Horne singing Beautiful Dreamer by Stephen Foster. And it was the choice of William Charlton Perkins, my guest. And just as we approach the end of the program, and you mentioned Joan Sutherland and Marilyn Horne together had for some reason the ability to match their voices so well. I'm sure you'll agree.
Absolutely. Their partnership during the 70s, 60s and 70s, even 80s, was one of the legends of the international opera scene. They were very, very close friends. Mm-hmm. And they used to sit and do their tatting and their needlework in the wings during their performances.
That's right.
Absolutely wonderful together.
There's a lovely documentary on DVD of Marilyn, of Joan Sutherland, and there's a scene with them sitting knitting.
That's right.
Or doing something in Joan's house.
Yeah.
So it was quite a thing. Well, thank you for that little snatch of Marilyn Horne. But now, just to close, William, your book, Meetings with Mozart, which is what caused this interview to happen in the first place, because I was so impressed when I read it, you said that it is available online, both as an e-book, and you can order it online at the moment, but it's not available in shops here yet. So the websites you've given me are www.bookguild.co.uk, and also for the ebook, www.amazon.co.uk. So let me just give you that first one again, www.bookguild.co.uk. And I really recommend this book that you have a read, because not only will it make you want to rush off and listen to Mozart, the works they've been discussing, but just to meet the characters that William has created. So, William, thank you very much. And I hope there will be a sequel. Or will that give too much away?
I'm already about 11,000 words into the sequel.
Aha. Don't give anything away.
No, okay.
William Charlton Perkins, thank you very much.
Thank you, Rodney. It's been great being with you. Thank you.
People of Note on Fine Music Radio was proudly brought to you by Peter Turin Productions.